This is Sarah Reif with A Place to Call Home, our series of interviews with people about their experiences being homeless. Today we'll bring you two interviews with three people who are homeless as a result of fires in Lake and Mendocino counties.
I'm Brendan.
And I'm Celine.
How long have you guys been in Ukiah?
About a month and a week or so.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Same.
How'd you get here?
We hooked up with this guy back in Lake County who, he had this van, and we stopped in Ukiah for a night or two, and the van ended up kind of breaking down. And one night, I guess he got it started because we woke up in the morning and he was gone with all of our stuff that we had in the van. Mm-hmm. The van was too small for us all to sleep in there, so we were sleeping like next to Jack in the Box, and we ended up really liking the people that were around there, and it's a nice area, and so we just
decided to stay. Yep.
Yeah.
So what do you like about Ukiah?
General mood's a lot better. I mean, we're from Lake County and Clear Lake, it really is, like, after coming up here especially, it's a fairly depressing place. Like, they're just, people's mindsets are a lot worse. People are a lot more weary. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're a lot more weary of, like, strangers. Like, if you say hi to someone on the street, they won't return it back most of the time. They look at you like, what are you trying to get from me, you know? And people up here, it's just more upbeat. It's a lot easier being homeless. Like, the first night when I was walking around at like 2 in the morning collecting recycling and a cop drove by me and didn't stop me, I was like, oh my God. Like, because in Clear Lake, that would not fly whatsoever. Like, hanging out in Walmart parking lot, the police will come within like 15 minutes to kick you out pretty much. Mm-hmm. And up here, it's a lot more tolerated, it seems like. And plus, a change of scenery is nice too. Mm-hmm.
So how do you guys manage day to day? Like, how do you get food?
It's fairly easy to come by food, I guess. I mean, there's food drives and stuff, and the people around here, especially the other homeless, are really helpful with stuff like that. Like, somebody will have a food stamps card, you know, and they'll buy, like, a little dinner pretty much for everyone. There's a little barbecue, like, next to Jack in the Box that they use sometimes to cook burgers and grilled cheese and stuff like that. And, like, the people around here are a lot more helpful, too. If they see that you're homeless hanging out around Jack in the Box, they'll, like, come up and be like, hey, do you want me to buy you a burger or something? And, you know, and it's like we well enough where sometimes we're like, no, we're good, we're pretty full right now, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's nice to have that sense of community where everyone's kind of looking out for each other.
It's definitely been good in that aspect, yeah. It's like people are not as distrusting, I guess, around here.
Mm-hmm. And what about setting up a place to sleep? You said that the van that you were hanging out in just kind of vanished. So how do you set up a spot to sleep at night?
Well, again, our fellow people helped us out, and they hooked us up with the tent. And there's an air mattress we bought from Walmart. It was like $9.74, and that was perfect for us to sleep on. We were like pretty comfy just with that alone, you know. Mm-hmm. Ended up finding two sleeping bags in a creek.
Yeah.
And they were wet, but I dried them out, and we were using that. And I don't know. It's fairly easy to, like, come across this stuff. Even since our stuff got taken last night, we already had, since we kind of told people what happened, this one chick gave us a tent that's even bigger than our old one, and we've already been given two sleeping bags since then, you know, and so we're already kind of back to a point where we can try and find a different spot, you know, obviously.
Yeah,
but
we've met some really cool and helpful people while being here, and so, yeah, those are the people that have been helping us out and kind of teaching us the ropes, I guess, around here.
Yeah, when you're homeless, it's like all you really have is like each other, and
your
so I don't know, it's just you help each other out like that, you know.
We treat the way we would like to be treated, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess it's more of a trade and barter system, right?
Yeah,
I guess it's like if you help somebody out, you know, then in the future, if
pay
you know
forward.
Yeah, exactly, if somebody needs help, then we help them out, whatever, return the favor.
And you mentioned that people teach you the ropes. What are the things that you need to know out there?
I guess just safety things and
who to look out for.
Yeah, exactly.
People that might be dangerous or people that
have
don't
malintent.
Like
malintent. Yeah, people that might have malintent.
People that don't like certain things that you want to keep from them, like I don't know, like you're Jewish or something. Like, and teaching us the ropes is in like what are safe spots to hang out at, where you can get help. Like McAvin's here is.
Plowshares,
and yeah, where to find food, and even where to find cigarette butts. You know, where the ashtrays are good and stocked.
Yeah, from something as simple as cigarette butts to, you know, actual help,
place
like
to sleep
place
and
these places. Yeah, and
place to
place
eat,
to
and
stay.
Yeah.
And yesterday was your birthday, and you had an experience that wasn't especially great. Can you talk about that?
Well, we had all our stuff taken, pretty much, where we had our tent set up. We came back after, you know, a day of being out, and all our stuff was gone. It was as if nothing had ever been there.
Yeah, I mean, we had a good amount of sentimental stuff, and we've lost our house in wildfires around here twice in the past, like, 3 or 4 years, and so it was just kind of like the same thing all over again, just, like, starting out with absolutely nothing.
Nothing but what we had on our backs, yeah.
Yep. And so, I mean, I guess we're kind of used to it, but it still sucks just as much when it happens.
Material things will always, you know, come around and come back, but yeah, it's
kind of she had a lot of, like, artwork that she had been saving from the past, like, year.
As well as photos. Like,
journals that we'd keep about each other. And yeah.
Yeah.
She had a huge coloring pen, or, like, a collection of just, like, gel pens and markers and color pencils and stuff. And yeah.
Yep.
Stuff that, like, might seem small to other people, but, like, just being out here, like, you got a lot of time in your hands, you know, and, like, you become attached to, you know, just little things like that.
Things like that, yeah.
It's a lot harder to replace stuff like that, too.
Yeah, for not having a lot of stuff, yeah, it's, yeah.
Yeah, you give value to.
To smaller things, yeah. I guess, yeah.
School may let you appreciate things like that a lot more.
Humbling.
Yeah, it is.
How old were you when you lost your houses in the fires in Lake County?
I think 20 and 21.
Yeah, first time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were, we were renting a two-bedroom, two-bath house for $650 a month.
It was in this really awesome, it was called Anderson Springs. It was at the base of Cobb Mountain. We had, like, no neighbors on either side of us that we could see, really, like, super private and, like, and smack dab in the middle of this, like, huge pine tree forest and stuff, and it was, like,
it was beautiful.
It was really beautiful, yeah, and you could sit out on your front porch for, like, 4 hours, and not a single car would drive by, and right down the road from us was this rec center where they'd have, like, open mic nights, and there was a huge swimming pool and a huge creek that they'd dam up for people swimming that, too, and there was a good sense of community there. Like, our neighbors were, like, extremely nice.
Yeah, the neighbors we did have, like, close by, that were, yeah, just complete,
One of our neighbors, he actually was one of the only casualties in the first wildfire.
Coyote.
Well, the weather caller? Huh? The Valley Fire?
Yeah, the Valley Fire.
The first day we moved into the house, though, like, he bought us a $400 carpet cleaning service because he's like, oh, you guys are a couple moving into your first house. You guys deserve to have a clean home. And
yeah, just things like that, yeah.
It was
super
awesome.
Nice.
He bought a brand new set of tires for my car because he noticed that they were bald and stuff. Just really giving, caring person. We'd make dinner for him. He was vegan, and so it kind of introduced us to vegan cooking a little bit. And we'd go over there and have dinners with him and stuff. But, yeah,
nice memories, yeah.
Unfortunately, he was too attached to his house and stuff, and I haven't thought about him a lot, I guess. Yeah, it just sucks
that was,
imagining,
I guess,
what he went through.
Yeah, that was the beginning of us pretty much being homeless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After we'd lost that house, I mean, it was crazy. Like, $650 a month was, like, we got a pretty good deal for that place, but
the
afterwards,
rent, yeah, prices just rocked.
Like, doubled, like, a
yeah.
two-bedroom, two-bathroom house in Lake County, like, went from, yeah, like, $700 was a pretty normal price to, like, $1,300 was, like, minimum,
yeah.
Which was a little out of our price range. And we got, like, $7,000 from FEMA, and we already had, like, $2,000 saved up. We were doing pretty good back then. We both had good jobs, and we were able to save money and stuff. And we bought this, like, it was, like, 29-foot travel trailer, and it had two pop-outs, and we were living in that for a long time, and it was pretty awesome. We were pretty comfy in there and stuff, and a friend that we had met, he had a 700 plant grow operation up in the hills around Clear Lake, and we moved the trailer up there because he had a bunch of trimming work lined up, and our trailer was up there for like 3 days, and then the Sulphur Bank fire broke out, and we didn't have a truck personally that we could tow our trailer with. Yeah, we ended up having to leave our trailer up there, and sure enough, it ended up burning up in the fire along with all the plants my buddy had, which was all the work we had lined up for that we were kind of relying on for the next month and a half. And since we weren't the property owners or anything like that, we didn't get any help from FEMA that time, and so that's what. And then we also, our car got hit and run and totaled about a month after that too, and that's what we were living out of for a while, was our car. And so then that knocked us down another peg, and then we've just been kind of on the streets ever since. That was about a year ago.
Yeah, we've had help here and there from, you know, people staying at their houses and stuff.
Yeah.
But we never like to overstay our welcome, I
guess. Yeah, it's kind of more comfortable, like, even with the roof over your head and stuff. Even you can do all the dishes and as much housework as you can and try to help out as much as you can, but you still end up feeling like you're, taking space that people don't appreciate or whatever. And it's just kind of more comfortable for ourselves to be on our own or something, you know?
Yeah, we've been together 6.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been together through a lot. So.
Yeah.
It's definitely good to have another person out there if you're homeless. If you're alone out there, I can think it's a lot worse. But if you got a team, a little two people, you know, it's a lot more doable. And yeah.
It looks like you have a dog friend also.
Oh yeah.
Sina, the wiener dog.
Yeah, she's about 4 months old or so when our house burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's kind of been bouncing around and on the road with us ever since.
Yeah,
so
she's a trooper for sure.
Yeah, she's used to it and it's nice.
She's used to moving around, yeah. She can adapt and settle wherever she is. As long as she's with us, she's happy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next for you guys now that after this latest setback?
I don't know. It's kind of hard. Like, we are heroin addicts, and so I
just take day by day, pretty much.
Hope to God soon that we can make that final jump to quit. And I mean, because that's like, you know, of course, that's exactly what's holding us back. And
we understand that. Yeah.
I don't know. We're smart kids. I mean, I graduated high school 2 years early, and then she got like perfect grades. Like, we just know we could be doing a lot better for ourselves right now. And
a lot of people that we meet too tell us the same thing, that, you know, they see a lot of potential and all that good stuff.
But heroin kind of robs you of all that.
Mm-hmm. Takes hold of you.
Yeah, yep.
Doesn't let go.
Yep. It's hard to get anywhere if every day you have to be worried about getting enough money to keep yourself well for the day, and doesn't leave much hope for much else after that.
Doesn't let you progress in any way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we definitely, you know, we don't want to be out here living this kind of life and stuff, because, I mean, we're really happy where we were, you know, prior to this in our house.
Actually, we were clean then, too. We had been on heroin for about a year, and then we got clean and got a house together and stuff, and we're living like that for like a year and a half. And then
2 years, pretty much, yeah.
When our house burned down and we got that $7,000, we ended up kind of like, we've been through a lot, tried
relapsed
again,
much,
and, yeah, relapsed, and then ever since then, it's like
downhill.
Because you really can't progress anywhere. Like, if you're on heroin, like, you can, if you're lucky, you can stay at the same point you're at, or you get knocked back. And with all everything that's happened, we just keep getting knocked back until we're at this bare minimum spot where we don't really have anything whatsoever. And
but each other.
Yep, pretty much. But each other.
Yeah. Hopefully next we'll
quit.
Be clean. Yeah, and try to get back to the point that we were.
Yeah.
You know.
Good,
yeah.
Good jobs and
being legit happy, not a kind of
not
unnatural. I don't know how to say it.
Artificial.
Yeah, artificial happy.
Yeah.
What kind of jobs did you guys have?
I was working at the local supermarket. I was working in the deli, and then I had a different job too. I was working at a like burger joint too, at the same place or in the same town.
Yeah, I was a construction worker. And I enjoyed that work a lot. And
he loves to be outside.
Yeah.
So office job is definitely not for him.
Yeah. I definitely wish I could be doing that right now. Without a car or a place to live and all that, it's not entirely feasible.
Gives you a lot more satisfaction, too, you know, having that kind of life. Like, this kind
definitely.
Of life just doesn't. I mean, you can find satisfaction in the small things, you know, like we said, it's more humbling and stuff. And
I mean, I definitely wouldn't say that we're depressed at all. I mean,
I mean, I don't think. You know, at least me, I can say for myself that I wouldn't give, you know, I wouldn't change anything pretty much.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everything that's happened, at least the way that I think of it, everything that happens, you know, leads me to where I am that day and the person that I've become. And for the most part, I'm pretty happy with the person that I am, just morals and all that stuff as I've never lost.
And you said that you make a lot of art. What kind of art do you make?
Well, for the most part, I'm a photographer. But I love to color and draw and stuff all around different, I guess, areas of art. But
yeah, she used to work under the photographer from our hometown and do a lot of projects with her and stuff, and she'd model in some of them.
Kind of like apprentice, yeah.
Yeah.
Under her, yeah. I love, yeah, photography is my passion, so eventually I guess that'd be my dream job.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of hard nowadays to make that a good paying job. But
with everyone having a super amazing 18 megapixel camera right in their pocket.
Yep, and their phones.
Everyone
yeah.
can become a photographer.
Yep.
She had a nice, like, $1,000 camera, too, and stuff that mm-hmm. lost. And yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to tell your story and being so forthcoming. It's really an honor.
Yeah, we try to be as honest as we can. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, and good luck. This is Sarah Reith. Our next guest makes some pretty serious allegations of police harassment. I spoke with Ukiah Police Chief Chris Dewey about some of the specific quotes and the police approach to homeless members of the community. He said he couldn't comment on specific instances and I couldn't provide dates and times. He did say that officers have body cameras and that he encourages people who feel they've been treated unfairly to make a complaint. He assured me that every complaint will be investigated, whether it's made in person or in writing or by phone call. Our job is to protect the safety of everyone, he told me. He said our officers try as much as possible to mitigate the need and direct people towards resources. Then they issue warnings. He emphasized that as a very last resort, officers will issue citations, but that citations can turn into a referral for services. He and another officer I spoke with after a recent city council meeting said they were not familiar with the case of a woman in a wheelchair being cited last fall. Dewey said that sometimes people refuse services. He said we were really lucky to have a winter shelter and that he favors a day shelter where people can get the services they need. And now for our next guest.
Morning, my name's Tina Milberger and I'm homeless.
How long have you been homeless?
Been homeless since after the fire, so October of 2017.
So have you been in Ukiah since then?
Yes. I did go visit my sister shortly in October and had a nervous breakdown. And then after I got out of the hospital, then I came back. And then I met Tony at NorCal Christian Ministries and got into the winter shelter. And then that closed in the end of April. Homeless since October.
And I know a lot of people had their houses and places of business or employment burned out. What was your employment situation?
I had hurt my back a few years back, so I haven't been able to work. But I was project manager at the Pepper Mill, the signs and lighting department. And then my injuries became too much and I couldn't work anymore.
So what have been some of the toughest obstacles that you've faced since you've found yourself homeless in Ukiah?
The biggest obstacle I have is depression. The depression and anxiety is skyrocketed because I'm used to working and being independent. And the community isn't set up to bring you out of the situation. You just have to jump hoops just to survive and don't have a focus on getting on my feet.
And what about the treatment from other community members?
It depends on where I'm at and, you know, the way I look. And if I look homeless, then you get total disrespect, like you earned it and people should have the right to steal from you and beat you up and cause you bodily harm. And it's a scary place out here in this community.
Who steals from you and beats you up?
I haven't been beat up. Luckily, I have a vehicle and I sleep in my vehicle. But the stealing is bad. You have to watch everything you have, no matter where you are. Can't even ask somebody to watch it because nobody wants to get involved if somebody's coming to steal from you. So I try to keep me and Mom's stuff in the car at all times. Luckily, I'm blessed I have a storage unit. So I do get to keep a lot of my stuff. But camping or doing things, the food goes missing, blankets go missing, sleeping bags go missing. You know, whatever people's needs are, which is food and warmth right now, those items will go stolen constantly.
And we were talking about something before we got started about a particular source of harassment. Are you comfortable talking about that?
Yes, totally. People are getting records and camping tickets and then warrants, and they're good people. They, like mom, my mom, she, her health is bad, and she was trying to camp out. She never had a record in her life, and now she's got a camping ticket, and we're afraid it might have turned into a warrant. These people need more help, not punished for their situation. And then what's the reason to put them with a record or $400 ticket that they can't afford? If they had $400, they'd have spent 2 weeks in a motel. I mean, and this is happening to so many people, young and old. And how do they get out of it? Then if they can't pay the ticket, then we get a warrant. And then we get a record, a police record. I don't understand that.
So you're living in your car with your mom right now?
Yes. Yes.
And how old is your mother?
65. The cops get to throw our stuff, take our stuff, give us a ticket, and leave us there without any food or protection. And I don't see where that's decent to humanity at all. And they just pump up their chest and they come at you and your PTSD goes off the rocker. They put you down, they treat us bad, and then they leave us stranded with less than we already had, with no food, no clothing, no blanket protection at all.
Have you or your mom had the chance to try to get this stuff back? Have you had any success with that?
No, we have not. We've found other places like Dorcas to go, or NorCal will help us get back.
So can you describe this system of getting citations? Have you gotten one, and what's it been like to try to work through that situation?
Personally, I have not. My mom has two. She got one in September, one in October.
These were camping citations?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And this, my mom has never had a record. And now we're part of the criminals. Part, she doesn't lie, cheat, steal, she can't walk, and they take everything and give her a ticket. They know she can't work. I don't understand the mentality, the rules, the way people that are need the help, their dignity is it's just been abused, and they leave them with depression and fear and sadness. And how do you break out of that when you know that if you go anywhere, you're back with the cops at any moment, and they're going to take everything? People's shopping carts get taken with everything in them. They just leave them without anything. They don't help. They just put them in jail. Or give them a citation.
What's your mom going to do now?
We're working with the Community Development Commission, and we're trying to get her into housing, but I applied for housing in January. She applied in March, and luckily she's getting closer, it seems like, and then I can move in with her to take care of her. But we just got to do everything we can to not get tickets or draw attention or be anywhere we're not supposed to be. So the constant fear all day long is exhausting, plus our bad health.
Was your mom burned out in the fire also?
No, ma'am. She was in Clear Lake, and then I got back with her in November, so we were in the shelter. And then she stays with me now in the car.
How did your mom end up homeless?
Lack of finances. with her health. She was doing in-home care service for others, but then now she can't walk, and her COPD, she can't breathe, so she can't physically make an income anymore. So she's pretty well stuck.
So it sounds like you're living out of your car and being a full-time caregiver for your mom.
Yes, and I am full-time, and I love it, but the she can't even get services through the in-home care service to get help because she's in the car. Unless she has a place, they won't help me financially while I'm taking care of her, and they won't give her the okay to have somebody. And she needs somebody 24/7. If it wasn't me, I don't know where she'd be right now. And I don't like that feeling, and I'm sure she doesn't either.
Do you have any idea of when you're going to be able to find a place?
No, because I'm on disability, so I get $900 a month, and with the gas and the insurance and food, and the money doesn't last us. That's two people trying to survive, so we can't even save money for a utility deposit. We can't even save anything for a home deposit, because $900 with two people in a month, it doesn't work. But that's the only income we have.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I didn't ask you about?
I would like to community to know that I have a degree. My mom is highly educated. I have had good careers. I was injured, and now I'm homeless. And the fire didn't burn down the house, but I was asked to leave at the place where I was renting because the fire had caused so much emotional stress to the people that were there. They didn't want me there because they started helping other people with, because they had farm property. And they could put the animals there, so then they asked me to leave. I don't have a way to save money to get on my feet again. And I just want people to know that we're trying, but we've got to go to Doris Street and Jones to get help. We got to go to Luce Street. We got to go to Clara Street. Everything is sprawled out. There's no access in a facility that can handle all our needs. So, and we got to do a little bit here, a little bit there, and get over there. And it's like everything is so sprawled out, and it gives us more chances to be seen on the streets, and then people are getting abused. So if there was one place to get help, that would be good, because then we wouldn't be physically visible, and that would probably make the community happier. But we're not bad. Yes, we have records now, but those are camping tickets, and those are on our record. And at our ages, it's kind of embarrassing to have a record when we've lived a good life until our health got poor. And now I have a broken back. I can't even get to the doctors. I mean, it's terrible. The community has bad vibes about us, and we have bad vibes about the police. And the police get to harass us no matter where we are. And it's sad. I just don't know if the community is aware how hard it is and what we go through as individuals trying to become part of society again.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Sarah. Thank you.
This is Sarah Reith with A Place to Call Home. We just heard from Tina Milberger and a young couple who were made homeless by fires in the last few years.